Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So nurses, you got striking nurses in Massachusetts up there in Worcester. You got over 2,000 of them in Buffalo, New York. Remember when they were heroes and essential and they were patriots and we were applauding them as they were going to work and we were slapping them on the back. Thank you for your service. Remember those days? Yes. The days of yesteryear. And now what you get is you get what's going on out on the West Coast with this Kaiser Permanente. And you want to talk about a slap in the face. From what I understand, the contract that they've been offered is a 1% raise for 3 years for the people who are working there now and for new hires to see their wages cut by 25%. And you go, how do you do that to people that you called patriotic essential heroes? And then you're surprised that they're going to probably go on strike and say, no, we're not taking it. That's why I have asked Noah Lennard to come talk with us. Noah is a reporter over at Mother Jones, where they do fantastic work. He is up on this story. Noah, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course, thanks for having me on, Rick.
So am I getting these numbers right? A 1% raise for 3 years, which isn't anywhere near the cost of living and inflation. And then for new hires, whacking them down by a quarter. How is that even remotely possible?
Right, yeah. So that was what Kaiser came out of the gate with. It was initial proposal was going to be cuts of between 26 and 39% for new hires starting in 2023. And that led in the past couple of weeks to overwhelming strike authorization votes from unions that cover about 40,000 workers. Since then, we've just learned that on Tuesday, they backed down only slightly to a 15% wage cut for new hires, which is still unacceptable to Kaiser workers, which is why just a couple hours ago, their unions put in a 10-day strike notice, which is the legal requirement for healthcare workers. So on November 15th, more than 30,000 workers will go on strike unless Kaiser further changes its offer.
And that's going to be a major strike to California's healthcare system. Because to be honest, I don't think there are enough scab nurses out there, or these traveling temporary nurses, scab nurses. I don't know there are enough out there to fill that void, are there?
No, it isn't. I mean, there's a huge number of nurses, and it may even grow. There's another 8,000 Kaiser workers who have authorized strikes who have not yet put in their 10-day notice, but they could do that any day. So we're talking about workers in California, Washington, Oregon, Georgia, Hawaii. I mean, this is a huge healthcare strike. And yeah, Kaiser has been putting out there through this company, scab labor company called Huffmaster, trying to hire nurses. And the salaries are tremendous, you know, $12,000 for a week of work in some cases. But, you know, we're talking about tens of thousands of workers here.
No, it's crazy. We spoke with a nurse from Buffalo. We're here recently. And the CEO of the Mercy Hospital there, a nonprofit Catholic hospital, is saying that they're spending tens of millions of dollars more than they were expecting or they needed to fight off this strike. And I'm going, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just pay your nurses a reasonable wage and the staffing levels that they're fighting for and save yourself millions of dollars unless this is just a power grab and a union busting opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, they can afford more. You know, they've come down from 26 to 39% to 15 already. That's a huge drop. And I mean, also, they're a nonprofit. The numbers are all out there. They've made more than $10 billion throughout the pandemic. They made more than $2 billion just in the last quarter alone. The CEO, they declined to tell me how much the CEO makes, but the most recent CEO made $35 million, including his retirement package. So they are paying lots of people at the top. They're still making money on top of that. And the workers, I think, are quite clearly understand that there's more money out there for them, especially after a year and a half of the pandemic.
So not a lot of these workers that you talk to, you know, these aren't people who are making $50, $60 an hour. These are people who are making $15 maybe if they're lucky and then up from there. I mean, we're not talking about people who are living high off the hog. They're not making a killing. They're barely making a living, as I understand.
Yeah. And I think the thing I want to stress here and that they really stressed to me was, you know, they didn't go into healthcare to get rich. They want to have a nice middle class life from doing that. But the real thing, the reason they're striking here is they're concerned about their patients. They feel that there's already a staffing shortage, as many of us have probably read about in hospitals right now. And then they wonder, how are you going to get good workers and retain good workers when you cut the pay 15%? And they also worry about what's the workplace going to be like? You know, are these new workers most likely going to resent the older workers who are getting paid more for the same work? And they also worry, are we, the higher paid workers, going to get laid off so they can just replace us with these new workers who are at the lower tier? I mean, which makes total sense that you know, company that's trying to maximize its revenue would do that.
Well, I think we're seeing the two-tier wage system thing playing out in places like Kellogg's, at places like John Deere and other places where it is not workable, and it does cause that division. And I would argue, and maybe you'll agree, I would argue that's the point, that the company wants to cause that kind of dissension, to rip the union apart so that maybe this kind of stuff doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, historically two-tier wages have not been good for union solidarity, as you know. And so, I mean, that it makes a lot of sense. And also, I think it's, you know, we've heard about 40 years of declining union membership and, you know, the erosion of the middle class. And now we're supposed to be at a moment where workers have more leverage, hopefully maybe making a dent in undoing some of the damage that's been done. And companies are just trying to go even further and cut wages for the, you know, new workers who are coming in even more at what's supposed to be a moment of increased labor power, which is why we're seeing strike authorizations and actual strikes.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those moments where you go, you know, not really sure who's running the show over there, but it seems really short-sighted, especially given the fact that I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Kaiser, like a lot of these healthcare facilities, we're getting PPP money. There's money there. There's money to be spread around. It just seems like greed. It just seems like, well, you know, we've got the control and the power to tell you no. And it just seems like that's the overarching theme there.
Yeah, and with Kaiser, I mean, they're actually in such a good financial position that they got about $500 million through the CARES Act, but then they made a big show of announcing that they had returned the money because they didn't need it anymore. They were doing so well financially because they're more of a membership model that served them really well during the pandemic. But, you know, then I talked to workers, someone like Holly Seely, who's a nurse or ER tech in Hawaii, and she's working two jobs, 36 hours at the hospital, and then 30 hours at a local pharmacy to make ends meet in Hawaii. So, you know, she already can't afford her current salary, let alone a 1 or 2% raise at a time when you have inflation going at 4 or 5%.
Yeah, how do you offer in a time where, you know, look, the inflation numbers I just saw were like 5%. How do you go? We're going to give you 1% over the next 3 years and expect someone to take that? I look at that, and my hot take on seeing those numbers was Kaiser wants a strike. Because there's no way anyone can conceivably accept that. There's no way a union could go, yeah, we're gonna take this back to the members, and the members are gonna accept it. There's just no way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand. I mean, that maybe is just their negotiating tactics here. I mean, in 2019, they got close to having more than 80,000 workers go on strike and ultimately back down. We're already seeing them starting to give some ground, but I think now, like you saw with the IATSE potential strike in Hollywood, now that a strike authorization date has actually been set, you know, maybe they'll finally come to the table and, you know, start presenting real offers that workers have, you know, there's a chance they might accept, but we'll see.
So now the strike has been authorized, or there's an authorization vote coming?
Yeah, the strike has been authorized overwhelmingly. That happened last month. Kind of you saw votes of like 93%, 96%, depending on which local. Right. And now just today they said it's authorized and the strike will start on November 15th, unless something changes with the contract. But right now we're 10 days out from.
So it'll be interesting to see over these next 10 days if there's any negotiation, or if they do like Kellogg's did today and said, this is our last best and final offer. There's nothing more. And that's, I guess, the end of talks for a while, I guess. Do you see that happening here?
I wonder. I mean, it was interesting in researching this article. I went back in the archives and a very similar thing happened in 1986 where they tried to do two-tier wages Kaiser. And they ended up going through with it. A strike happened. And in that case, it caused a lot of tension within the union. They felt they should have gotten more support from at the national level. But Kaiser did win. Workers were on strike for more than 6 weeks, but they ended up having to accept the two-tier wages. I think this time I would be very surprised to see that happen. And it seems like there's way more strength in the union and also just way more public support. And also everything you said at the beginning. I mean, after everything we've heard about nurses for a year and a half and healthcare professionals, it's just hard to imagine them accepting a pay cut, and of course, why should they?
Yeah, I mean, it's a slap in the face is what it is, especially after all of the platitudes and all that, to then go, here, we're not even going to give you, we're literally not going to even give you pennies, and we're taking the platitudes back as well. No more hero status and not even pennies. It's crazy, but this is kind of the world that we're, this strange world we're in, and I think maybe I think this moment, with all of this swell of support, I think this is the wrong time for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I think the John Deere strike is a really good example of that. And maybe sometimes also not in this case, but I think, you know, there the union leadership was a little out of step, or quite out of step with the right with members. You know, you had a contract that they said, here's the deal, and it gets voted down more than 90%, and then another deal just getting voted down. I mean, I think in this case, the union leaders I've talked to from the West Coast Kaiser unions, I think they have a really good sense. They seem to have a good sense of where their members are and know that this is absolutely not going to be accepted. And, you know, all of the healthcare workers I've talked to at Kaiser are ready. You know, they seem ready to hold the line. And I think, and they also know that they have 100% have the public behind them. I mean, especially at this moment.
Yeah, no, and that's the important part. If anybody's been ever on strike, you know, it's that community support. And I go back to, you know, when I was a kid, I remember an old timer who said, you know, sometimes you got to go on strike. Sometimes you've got to do it to mobilize your members, to make them more militant, and to get them to understand that they're fighting for something. Because once they fight for it, they're never going to give it up. And I think that's something the working class in this country has forgotten, that the gains that we have, the conditions that we take for granted, people fought, bled, and died for generations.
Right. And I think also, you know, we're talking about what's going to happen under this new contract, but the Kaiser workers are already fed up. They feel there's, you know, a huge staffing shortage today. And, you know, so you talk to people who are going, you know, in an operating room for 7 or 8 hours before they get relief so they can take a quick break. I mean, they're fed up. They don't want how things are going today, much less the world that would exist under this contract.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. So 10 days, the 15th, we're going to absolutely be covering this. I do want to take a quick move away from this because, you know, in New York, something happened. I guess it was yesterday. There was a hunger strike for a couple of weeks, I guess. This New York taxi group that really, honestly, when you read into how badly these taxi drivers got screwed over continually for the last couple of decades, it's a horror story. But walk me through what happened there in New York with the taxi drivers.
Yeah, so it ends with a huge victory, but, you know, starting 2 weeks ago, I was, you know, for more than a month, they were outside City Hall 24/7 protesting against Mayor Bill de Blasio in New York. And what they want is a proposal. You know, taxi drivers in New York on average have about $500,000 of debt because that's how much it costs to buy these medallions that let you buy a taxi. But after Uber came in and through some other things, the city was doing a lot of bad things to jack up the prices. The medallion values crashed, so now they're underwater, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So they want the city to have a real debt relief plan. And that's what they were protesting for. They're on hunger strike for more than 2 weeks. And then finally, just yesterday, the city announced they've agreed basically to all of their demands. And they agreed to a plan that will cap debt at $170,000 and with low interest rates. So, I mean, it's a huge deal. I talked to a taxi cab driver yesterday who had $651,000 of debt. So he's seen his debt load go down by $475,000 with a monthly cap on payments. I mean, and I think it's interesting because, you know, the word strike is in there, but it's a very different kind of labor action than I think the ones you might see, you know, done by a union local. And it also reflects the fact that New York taxi cab drivers are 94% immigrant drivers, largely South Asian drivers. And that's a big form of resistance in South Asia, the hunger strike. And they deployed that to great effect here and got basically all of their demands met.
And they don't really have the right to unionize. This is just an association, right? This is just a...
Yeah, just an association, because there actually was, you know, Uber is now the king of misclassifying workers as 1099 workers. But actually, this happened in the taxi industry first. They, you know, as you know, they used to be employees, and then they, you know, some clever, shrewd lawyer started, you know, saying, well, we can treat them as contractors. So that happened a long time ago in the taxi industry. So yes, they're moving through this, you know, different kind of labor organization, more of a membership, you know, not an official union, but they were highly organized. And they also got tremendous support. You know, you had Majority Leader Chuck Schumer weighing in, you had AOC weighing in. It was basically everyone versus de Blasio in the end. And as a result, it wasn't that surprising that he caved. I mean, I was surprised that he held out for as long as he did. And I think the other thing that was smart here is that they had a very specific proposal. It wasn't that we don't like what you're doing, do something better.
Right.
They came up with their own plan. They got the New York City comptroller to score it, you know, show exactly how much it would cost. So they really went into the negotiating room with exactly what they wanted to get out of it, which is, in the end, they got that.
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, you could blame this a lot on Bloomberg and past administrations as well. So there was a way of passing that backwards, because this was really a screw job of working people regardless. And look, when Uber and Lyft came on scene, I was going, look, the taxi industry, there are no angels there. They've been screwing those workers for years, too. Where was the outrage for them? And the whole transportation thing is, if you're talking about trucking or taxi drivers or any of this stuff, they've all been screwed over and misclassified because, hey, you're your own boss. You get to buy these overly expensive medallions. You get to buy your own car. You get to upkeep it. You get to put gas in it, insure it, all that stuff. And maybe if you work 20 hours a day, you can make a profit.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's a particularly sinister story here, yeah, because it's so easy to blame Uber, and they are a villain in this story. But really what was happening is, medallions used to go for about $200,000, and then you had Bloomberg come into office with about $4 billion budget deficit, and he said, hey, if I start selling medallions for a lot more than that, I can plug that budget gap. And so in the end, they, through a lot of tricks, pushed up the medallion value from $200,000 to over $1 million, and the city ended up making $855 million off these jacked up medallion sales, which, I mean, they basically created a bubble of financial. It was, kind of like a subprime mortgage crisis, but of the city's own making. And now in the end, this plan that the taxi workers proposed has only been estimated to cost, I say only, but $93 million. That's a tenth of what the city made from screwing them over. So I mean, it seems that it's the least the city really.
It's the least doing. You cheat them, then you give them a little bit of relief, and you still your crime does pay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I also think for people who weren't at this hunger strike, I stopped by many times over the past 2 weeks. I mean, it was a pretty incredible scene. I mean, it was intense at moments, real joyful at others. But one of the main people I was talking to was a guy named Richard Chow. He's 63. He's diabetic. He has high blood pressure. His brother had been a driver who committed suicide in 2018 because he was more than $700,000 in debt. But I mean, I watched him for more than 2 weeks. He had no solid food, just Gatorade and coconut water. And you just watch him go from lose energy and energy and energy to the point where, by Monday he was in a wheelchair. And then yesterday he has this total victory, eats his first solid food in more than 2 weeks. So it was, being on strike is hard, but this was another level of, personal sacrifice that people in their 60s were making, people who should be retired by now and having a secure retirement after having invested in this, what was promised to them as an asset. The city ran ads saying this was better return than the stock market. Don't buy stock, buy a medallion.
Jeez. Again, this is, if this is what it takes to make a living in this country, that you got to go on a hunger strike, we've got some serious problems and some serious things that need to be taken care of. And in my view, the need for major comprehensive labor law reform so these situations don't pop up. But Noah, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing your thoughts on these stories, and keep up the great work there at Mother Jones. You love the stuff you guys do.
All right. Yeah. Thanks so much, Rick.
Good stuff. Thank you. Noah Lennard, reporter there at Mother Jones. We'll get links out on social media how you can check out his work. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.